Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of In the Money. I'm Roberta King, a vice president and branch leader with Fidelity Investments, and I'm looking forward to today's conversation with Tony Zhang. Tony is chief strategist of Options Play, and Tony's also a frequent CNBC guest. Tony, welcome. It's so good to be back with you today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. Thanks for having me. It's been a big 24 hours and looking forward to diving into it.
It sure has been. And for our audience, today is Thursday, April 30th, 2026. And as Tony's alluded to, we all continue to have a watchful eye on the markets and how they're responding to our current headlines. So let's get today's conversation started with your macroeconomic view. So Tony, just tell us, what has your attention in these last 24 hours?
Yeah, Roberta, you know, we started with the FOMC meeting 2 p.m. yesterday. We saw, as expected, a hold on interest rates, but we did see four dissidents on that report, and that was really something that was from my perspective a pretty significant move here, as we saw 10-year yields rise back above 4.4% here, really speaking to the fact that market expectations are for potentially no rate cuts all the way through the end of 2027, and even potentially some risk of higher interest rates, especially tied to currently with the situation that's happening in Iran with regards to oil prices and what we've seen in terms of the inflation print that came out this morning. But before we talk about that, I think we should discuss the Mag4 earnings that came out last night, which largely came out, I would say, better than expected, especially if you consider we started off this week with a bit of a scare on OpenAI's announcement that they were missing both revenue and user targets, and there was a potential for them to pull back on some of their CapEx spending. The markets have been incredibly sensitive to the amount of money that these major hyperscalers are spending right now for AI infrastructure. And there was a lot of attention on whether or not these companies were going to generate enough growth to essentially pay for this future capital expenditure spend. And largely last night, we got confirmation, at least from the major hyperscalers, that they were seeing early signs of growth as a result of their AI business that was in some ways, at the very least, justified the current spend. And we did see, for example, Meta actually increase their spending. But so far, markets are taking all of that seemingly in stride, given the fact that this week we started off on a fairly sensitive foot from that perspective. So if you take all of that into conjunction, it's really interesting to see that the S&P 500 is back at all-time highs. And I would say that largely is due to the fact that of the Mag4 earnings yesterday, largely coming in as expected. But the one thing that I think is really important for investors to be familiar with at the moment is the fact that even though we're at all-time highs, the leadership is incredibly narrow. If you look at the sectors over the last month or so, it's only technology that has outperformed the S&P 500. The other 10 sectors are actually underperforming the S&P 500. So you have one sector doing all of the leadership, which is not a particularly healthy sign for the markets. Because if there's any correction within tech, you're likely going to see a pretty significant tumble in the broader markets. What we really need to see here over the next few weeks is the rest of those 10 sectors play some catch up here. Now, there are some early signs that healthcare is, we've seen some early signs that healthcare is starting to show some leadership. This is one of the worst performing sectors. So we're seeing a little bit of rotation here this week. We also saw a little bit of communications, some of the other sectors also showing some strength here this week. So that's really what we're monitoring here for the next couple of weeks to see if the rest of the market can start playing some catch up here. With the VIX now back at 17%, this really leads me to believe that the markets at this moment is not really concerned about either geopolitical risks or the capital expenditure that these tech companies are currently spending at, nor are they really concerned about sort of the news that came out this early this week with regards to OpenAI. And then if we shift gears a little bit here, this morning we have the PC number coming in 3.5% year over year, with core coming in around 0.7%. This really shows us that inflation is certainly ticking higher here, and that is due to the oil shock from the Strait of Hormuz continuing to be closed. And that is something that I think we're going to have to contend with over the next couple of months and see how that shapes the Fed's policy going forward. Now, we obviously have a new incoming governor for the Fed that is going to be a little bit more dovish in terms of nature, and I think that is likely going to be a positive for the broader markets. And we're going to get a labor reading here next week here with non-farm payrolls coming out next Friday. That's going to give us a sense for how job numbers came out for April, because job numbers recently have been incredibly noisy. It's not been a really easy, it hasn't been particularly easy to get a good sense for whether the labor market is strong or continuing to deteriorate because of how noisy those numbers are. And that's really something that I think the Fed's going to have to contend with over the next couple of months is, you know, are we seeing a stagflationary environment as a result of the oil shock in the Middle East? And I think this is one of the things that the market is most underpricing at the moment right now in terms of risk, is the fact that 20% of the world's oil supply and liquid liquefied natural gas is essentially trapped. And there does not seem to be an easy path to de-escalation on that front. If anything, this week we've seen Iran kind of taken a hard stance with regards to the blockade, and Washington continues to dial up the pressure as well. And this is something that is, you know, why Brent is now at $120 a barrel, which is about 65% higher than we were before the start of the war. And it doesn't seem like we have a clear path as to how that's going to get resolved, even though the equity markets have essentially looked past that and have already priced in essentially this being resolved in the next few weeks. I think the markets are being perhaps a bit overly optimistic on that front. And this is really kind of, from my perspective, the biggest downside risk that I see here with the broader markets. But overall, the open AI concerns, I think that's still something that we should be aware of, because this is really the first scare that we've seen with regards to the amount of capital expenditure that these hyperscalers are continuing to spend on. And I think there's a reason to potentially have some hedges within the hyperscalers, or specifically the semiconductors that have been leading this rally over the last few weeks. And at the same time, keeping or pressing the energy play that we've been continuing to highlight over the last couple of months, that I still think that there's still potential upside in oil prices given the situation that we currently have in the Middle East.
Tony, thanks so much for sharing all that. It's a lot to digest that's happened recently. And I'm really curious to know, when you're talking about hyperscalers, where do you expect, when you're thinking about any valuation compression that might come, where do you think that might concentrate first? Are you thinking about computer chips, power, that infrastructure, or even the hyperscalers themselves?
Yeah, that's a really great question. If you look at kind of the AI infrastructure space, there's a few, I would say, industries within it that are probably most concerning. Let's first address the hyperscalers themselves. You know, a lot of them have come down in value over the last couple of, call it since the beginning of the year, and many of them are trading at what I would say very reasonable valuations. And I think yesterday's earnings proves that to be the correct play, given the fact that all the other hyperscalers, even though largely came in line, have started to sell off as a result of just the amount of capital expenditure that they are spending. Alphabet is probably the one that clearly has shown that their growth is justifying the amount of spend, and that's why Alphabet is definitely the most expensive from a valuation perspective. If you look at Microsoft, you look at Amazon, you look at Oracle, those are all trading at what I would say much more reasonable valuations. So I think the downside there is going to be somewhat limited. Within semiconductors, you definitely have a lot of semiconductors trading at very rich valuations. But I think yesterday's earnings at the moment supports those valuations and maintains those valuations for now. You definitely see some stretch valuations within utilities. A lot of the utilities have been bid up substantially here over the last couple of years. Last couple of quarters with regards to the expectation that the data centers are going to require a significant amount of power, and also just the power generation type stocks like GE, Vernova, or any of those particular stocks. Those are some of the ones that I would be taking a look at because they are trading at fairly rich valuations. And any scares with regards to the amount of capital expenditure that these hyperscalers are spending, and if there's any signs that they might need to pull back. So for example, OpenAI has $600 billion of commitments over the next few years for their capital expenditure. If they deem that some of those projects are going to be unnecessary, or they can't fund some of those projects, you know, some of the names that have really taken off here that are trading at 50, 60 times forward earnings, those are the ones that I'd be most concerned about.
That's insightful, Tony. Thank you so much for your perspective. So let's shift gears and get a little bit more tactical. And so based on what we've talked about thus far today, let's get your trade idea that you have for us today. So what other opportunity are you seeing in the market in any of these areas?
Yeah. So like I said, yesterday's earnings with regard to the major tech companies really, at least in the short run, solidified that the scare that we saw earlier this week is perhaps, or at least the market is looking past the scare that we saw here this week with regards to OpenAI. However, it doesn't take away from the fact that the leadership in the markets over the last 3 weeks have been concentrated in a single industry, not just a single sector, but a single industry, which has been semiconductors. And that is the type of market that is always concerning when you're at all-time highs and it's only a single industry dragging the rest of the market and the rest of the market is not participating or actually even in the red, as we saw last Friday. You know, out of the 11 sectors, five of them were in the red as we reached all-time highs. So from my perspective, there is a need to potentially look at having some hedges to the downside in semiconductors. And the name that I want to take a look at here is Lam Research, because recently we formed that double top here around that 275 level here in Lam Research, and it recently failed just around that 255, 260 resistance level, and momentum is starting to roll over here. So I think there's the potential for some of these semiconductors over the next couple of days potentially start pulling back. You know, with the exception of Alphabet, we've seen Microsoft, we've seen Amazon, we've seen Meta all sell off on yesterday's earnings, and that could potentially pull down the semis along with that as well. Even though today the semis have been fairly strong here, I'm looking past the next few weeks to see perhaps if the concentration that we see here in semis starts to unwind a little bit. And this is all, like I said, driven off of the OpenAI news earlier this week, which is probably a sign of potentially further cracks down the line, which is the fact that the AI companies have sold a pretty fantastic narrative over the last few years with regards to hyper growth. And on the back of it, these companies have spent hundreds of billions of dollars a year to try to capture that future demand. And the question is whether or not that demand is real and if it's at the pace that these companies have promised. And like I said, OpenAI is starting to show that that promise is potentially a little bit overstated. And that's really where the downside risk comes from with regards to these hyperscalers and specifically within the semiconductor space. So that's the downside risk that I currently see here right now. If you look at Lam Research, you know, their revenue is essentially more than 50% of their revenue is highly concentrated in just a few hyperscalers, which is largely where, if you look at OpenAI, Anthropic, and all of these major tech AI companies, you know, where that $600 billion that they're spending is largely going to these hyperscalers and specifically semiconductor companies, that's really where I think even a small change in capital expenditure or even just a reduction in the expected capital expenditure could potentially create a large revenue hit for some of these companies because, you know, they've essentially been sold out here over the last couple of years and markets have been pricing that out. So the way I want to play this here is just going out, like I said, just a couple of weeks out, going out to the May 15th expiration, the May monthly expiration, I'm looking at buying a 250 by 220 put spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $10.20 for that put spread. And that basically gives you, you know, the ability to hedge any downside exposure here over the next couple of weeks if we see some further concerns from investors with regards to the capital expenditure that these hyperscalers are spending, you're likely going to see these semiconductor stocks get hit relatively quickly. And that's why I'm taking a short-dated put spread on a semiconductor stock like Lam Research.
Tony, thanks so much for sharing that trade idea. I want to kind of stick with that last statement that you made for just a moment, because part of the valuation of any option is there's a component of it that's connected to time. And I'm curious to know, can you talk to us more about why you're choosing a May expiration that will expire, you know, within the next 15 days or so?
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. One, whenever you're looking at buying a hedge, generally speaking, you know, I'm looking at this simply as a short-term hedge, mostly going into earnings season. As you have Apple reporting later today, you have a couple of other major tech companies reporting here over the next week or so. That's really my biggest concern, is through that window of earnings season, you know, if we see some concerns with regards to hyperscalers, that's really what I'm trying to hedge against. So trading a short-dated option, this gives me one, the ability to limit the amount of capital expenditure that I have on this particular trade. Shorter-dated options are cheaper to purchase. And at the same time, if we do see some unwinding of the semiconductor industry, those types of unwinds, especially given the amount of concentration and how crowded this trade is right now, tends to happen fairly quickly. They tend to be quick and they tend to be violent, which is why I'm choosing a short-dated put spread that will take advantage of that short-term acceleration to the downside while keeping my risk to a minimum on this particular trade.
I appreciate that perspective, Tony. Thanks so much for sharing that. So I do understand you have a second trade idea to share with us today. What else are you seeing as far as opportunities?
Yeah, over the last couple of months, we've continued to press on this macro theme with regards to higher oil prices and looking at XLE or any of the individual energy names as potential upside. And after a bit of consolidation here over the last month or so, if you look at a chart here for XLE, we started to break back above that $58 resistance here. It's on an incredibly strong relative strength relative to the S&P 500. And, you know, my initial upside targets here for XLE is around $61 to the upside and potentially up back to the $63 all-time highs that we put in last month. And this is all because, as I said, you know, at the top of the show, I think the market is currently being a little bit too optimistic with regards to how things will resolve in the Middle East. If you look at the equity markets, you would think that there is no conflict in the Middle East and that the Strait of Hormuz is reopened and everything is back to normal. But I want to remind everyone that 20% of the world's oil supply is currently trapped. Liquefied natural gas is trapped, aluminum, nitrogen for fertilizer use. You know, that has major ramifications for inflation down the line, not to mention the physical oil markets. You know, in the U.S., we might not be feeling it so much because we're a net neutral exporter. But if you look at Asia, you look at Europe, those places are hurting substantially more. And that's gonna you know, play into the supply chain down the line. So and at the moment, it seems like Washington is trying to dial up the pressure and Iran is very much digging in their heels. And I think at the moment there isn't a quick diplomatic resolution that's likely, and the maximum pressure that we're putting on Iran only is going to force a potential further escalation here in oil prices. And then if you look at XLE just as a ETF, you know, the major energies have been energy companies have been printing record free cash flow even when oil was trading at $70 before the conflict. So with oil now, you know, at $100 plus, you're talking about significant free cash flow You know, we're talking about 8% free cash flow yield, you know, or with a 2.5% dividend yield. And these companies are now starting to embark on some massive buybacks, which puts a floor here on XLE as a sector and you know, brings further upside potential here as, you know, even if oil prices gets back down to 100 or maybe even the $90 range, you're still talking about a market environment that's incredibly favorable for the energy names within XLE. And that's why I have a favorable outlook here for XLE, at least in the short run, unless the Strait of Hormuz reopens and oil starts flowing back to normal. But even if things were to get resolved tomorrow, we have to remember that restarting oil supply pipelines, restarting shipping, restarting oil wells, that's something that usually takes weeks to months to happen. That's not something that happens overnight. So even then, even if things get resolved today, I think that the structural tailwinds for XLE remains in place at least for the next couple of months. So the way I want to play this here is to go out to the June expiration. I want to buy the 57.5 by 62.5 call spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $2.20 for that call spread, and that gives me the ability to take bullish exposure here in XLE, the ETF, for about $2.20, which is in this particular case, you know, a little under 5% of the stock of the ETS value that I'm risking in this particular case to take that upside potential for XLE.
Tony, thanks so much for laying out this trade idea for us. And as you've talked about it, there's just a lot going on, a myriad of risks and potential volatility issues that are facing the energy and oil sector. If your outlook's correct, how would you manage this trade through June to capture gains, assuming your thesis continues to be true?
Yeah, so there's two things that I'm really looking for managing this particular trade. The upside strike on this call spread is 62.5, with in my all-time, my upper target here for XLE is $63, and those two are aligned for that specific reason. So if XLE gets to that 62.5, $63 range, which is the upside target for this particular trade, that's where I would be looking at taking some profits and reevaluating at that point as to whether or not we want to roll this particular trade to try to seek for further upside if we feel at that point that the fundamentals still are in place for oil or for energy to continue moving higher here. And to the downside, I'm paying about $2.20 for this debit spread. But if, let's say, I lose half of that value for the debit spread, that would be a reason for me to cut my losses and move on. So those are the two ways that I would typically look at a trade like this in terms of if it's going in the direction I expect it to, how I'd manage it and potentially roll it, and if it doesn't go in my favor, where I would consider cutting my losses.
Thank you. That's helpful. So we often save time in our conversation each week to look back at a previous trade, and often our lived experiences are our best teachers. So I appreciate when you do this. So today, I understand you're looking back at an earlier trade on NVIDIA. Can you update us on what's happened since that trade?
Yeah, so on the beginning of March, we laid out a bullish thesis here on NVIDIA. It was trading around $180 or so. We bought the 180-210 call spread. We bought that for about $11.55. And as of right now, it's trading at around $19. That's about a 65% return on the capital that we've risked. Now, as we start getting closer to that May expiration, this is really where I think it's time to manage this particular trade. So first thing I'd like to do is simply close out the May call spread that I purchased here for $19. That'll give me about a 65% return on my capital risk. And then because yesterday's hyperscaler earnings announcement came out largely as expected, if not in some ways better than expected, with, for example, Amazon and Alphabet, I think that there's an opportunity potentially to roll this particular trade out to the June expiration. And given the pullback that we saw here in the stock today, essentially get long the June 200 by 230 call spread. Earlier today, you can pay about $9.90 for that new call spread. And if you factor into the profits that we made from the first first trade into the risk to reward ratio of the second trade, my net combined risk to reward ratio is now risking only $245 per contract because of the profits that I've taken from the first trade. And my maximum gain here, if NVIDIA is back above 230 by that June expiration, my maximum gain is $2,755. So if NVIDIA stays where it is and moves a little bit lower, I'm risking $245. But if it does move in the direction I expect it to and gets back to those all-time highs and even higher, you know, you see an upside potential of greater than around $2,700. And that's the type of risk-to-reward ratio that you want to shoot for whenever you have a winning trade and your thesis you believe is still intact and you have the potential to turn a winner into potentially a home run. This is the type of trade structure that I would like to take advantage of.
I appreciate you sharing this trade and the subsequent trade and the outcome. It's a great lesson for all of us to look at. I do have another question that's perhaps a little bit more general for our traders out there. When you're putting together your thesis, what data points do you use to validate? You know, you're doing your fundamental research and you're gathering a lot of information, but you know, when you're coming up with that ultimate thesis, what other data points do you look to?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And I think, you know, fundamental numbers can be quite overwhelming. There are so many different financial metrics that you can look at. You can look at them and you can slice and dice them in so many different ways. From my perspective, there are, I would say, four key fundamental metrics that I look at when I'm evaluating a company. And what I'm always trying to do is understand, how does a company compare to its peers across generally four metrics? And the first one is valuation, because that gives me a sense for how expensive is the stock relative to its peers. And obviously you want something that's relatively cheap to its peers if you're bullish on it, and you want something that's relatively expensive if you're bearish compared to its peers. Now, how do you evaluate whether that valuation is justified? There are three metrics that I generally look at. I look at earnings growth, revenue growth, and profitability. And arguably, profitability is the most important out of those three, because if a company is more profitable than its peers, then it justifies a higher valuation than its peers. So sort of your golden or the best possible scenario you're looking for is a company that's more profitable than its peers, but trading at a valuation that's lower than its peers. NVIDIA is actually a good example of that. NVIDIA is trading at around 25 times forward earnings, which is actually a discount to the semiconductor industry. Yet in terms of profitability, there's almost and nothing that comes close to NVIDIA's 55% net profit margins. Vice versa, if you look at you know, something like Lam Research, you know, it trades at a premium valuation, yet from a profitability perspective, Lam Research is actually behind its peers. And the other thing I'm looking at is just EPS and revenue growth, with revenue growth being the more important one, because you can always to some degree manufacture EPS growth by reducing expenses, but you can't manufacture revenue growth. And that's really where, you know, those are the four primary metrics that I look at to gauge, you know, how does a company compare to its peers and whether I feel that the valuation is justified for where it is right now.
Tony, that's really informative. Thank you. This does bring our conversation today to a close, and I just want to stop and say thank you again, Tony, for bringing us your thoughts and your trade ideas to us today.
Thank you so much, Roberta. It's been a pleasure to be here.
And I want to stop and thank all of our viewers as well. Thank you for tuning into our show today. Please don't forget to join the Trading Strategy Desk follow-up session, which will be held tomorrow. And that's Friday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can sign up for that session by going to fidelity.com/InTheMoneyFollowup. And if you're looking for even more insights or you missed today's live show, you can sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter and receive highlights of the trades discussed today. And you can do that by visiting fidelity.com/InvestorWeekly, or excuse me, Active Investor Weekly. And with that, we'll see you back for the next episode of In the Money next week. Until then, take care.
Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade.
The energy industries can be significantly affected by fluctuations in energy prices and supply and demand of energy fuels, energy conservation, the success of exploration projects, and tax and other government regulations.
Stock markets are volatile and can fluctuate significantly in response to company, industry, political, regulatory, market, or economic developments. Investing in stock involves risks, including the loss of principal.
Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Copyright 2026, FMR LLC. All rights reserved.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.